afternoon, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us today. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions during today's show. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. Thanks as always for being here. We really appreciate it. Let me get started by asking you to think about a question that's come in from a listener. And the listener says 2017 was a big year for bicycle and pedestrian initiatives in the city. And they want to ask you kind of basically how the initiatives that were talked about so much last year are going to get implemented in the coming year. And so let me read to you what they say. They say the Bike Walk Greater Lafayette Safety Plan was completed, suggesting items including large-scale education campaigns, creating a paid bicycle and pedestrian counselor position. Further, a bicycle and pedestrian citizen advisory committee was approved by citizen ordinance in 2018. How will these initiatives be carried out? This person wants to know. They want to know, will a full-time bicycle and pedestrian coordinator be hired in the coming year? Will the committee's plans be carried out? And so they want to know just kind of an update on those projects and others.
Sure. I'll back up just a little bit on that. As the caller correctly said, you know, we've went through an entire process starting with the initial bike pedestrian plan that we hired Butler, Fairman, and Seifert to help us develop over a period of years and public meetings that really laid out for the next 25 years where do we put our 10-foot-wide hiking biking trails, how do we connect our schools and our parks, how do we put in bike lanes in roads that already exist, and how do we make sure we add them to when we build new roads or we have right-of-way that would allow us to do that. And so we got that initial plan done, and then we have added recently the safety piece of it that was added to that plan, and there are several new components in that. So what we're doing now, Margie Deverall, who is on staff in our economic development department, heads up our bike pedestrian efforts throughout the community. She's avid about bicycling and hiking and running and all those pedestrian-friendly things that we want to do. You probably saw recently that we advertised on our website through Facebook and Twitter to start the Citizens Advisory Committee, which will work with myself, the city engineer, city council, to help us with the implementation of that plan and how we even look at some designs going forward. So where we are in that, we had several people apply. It's a little tough to get a feel for people exactly on paper. So I've started interviewing people personally for those slots. So I've interviewed myself and Cindy Murray, our city clerk. We've interviewed 6 people so far that have applied, and I have to tell you, they just blew me out of the water. I don't know where they've all been. They got great skills, great passion, great insight. Just in that interview process, they brought some things forward. So I've got about 5 or 6 more people to interview that applied. I actually told Margie and Cindy I'm thinking about going back to the city council and expanding that group from 7 people maybe to 9 or 10, because we've got people on there from the environmental side that's applied, that works with the Indy Green blog, people that are runners, people that are avid bicyclists, people that love downtown. I don't know how I'm hardly going to pick that many good people applied to be on that, that's willing to give the time and energy, and I'm thrilled. And so we're working on that. So we are implementing what we said we would do. And right now, the first piece that we thought was most important was to put that Citizens Advisory Committee together. And we're in the process of interviewing those folks that applied.
All right. Another question has come in from Michael, who writes, in the wake of the gutting of the EPA's budget, the Sierra Club has launched an initiative asking mayors across the country to pledge to move their cities towards 100% clean energy. And Michael says Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend is the first Hoosier mayor to sign on. He wants to know about your stance on green and renewable energy and whether you would support signing Lafayette on to such an initiative towards 100% clean energy.
Well, we'll certainly take a look at that. I'd have to look at it. I want to be honest. I'm cautious about signing on to big national campaigns like that without looking at it very, very closely. And I also don't just sign something that sounds good so I can sign it. and know that maybe we won't get there. It won't get there in my lifetime. But with that being said, I am certainly a supporter of the environment, of clean energy, renewable energy. We have robust recycling programs here in our community. A couple years ago, we won an award from the state of Indiana because we had like 42 green initiatives that we had started within the city of Lafayette that we were doing and that we were promoting. Our work through the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation on water quality, stormwater runoff. You know, we have a stormwater utility here now. So our next big project that we're working on, and we've got it in the budget for the next couple of years, is we're going to try to put a solar field down at the wastewater treatment plant and totally take the wastewater treatment plant through that solar field and cogeneration off the electric grid. We think that's a huge piece for us. As you know, we reapply our sludge from our wastewater treatment plant to farm fields. We don't take it to landfills, so we do that right now. Well, we're going to continue to look at those things. City Bus, which is not the city of Lafayette, though, but I think it's a big piece of the community, as you know, has had the windmills for several years. I appoint people to that board. They have went to hybrids and all kinds of diesel fuel and all kinds of things, the gas on some of those buses to be more environmentally friendly. And so it's something we certainly look at here, and we're always continually how we evaluate. A couple years ago, we did about $400,000 worth of upgrades to City Hall to make us more energy efficient. We had an energy audit done, and we've done that on all of our buildings. So we continue to look at those opportunities. As far as saying would I sign that or something right now without reading through it exactly, I mean, I really can't say one way or another, but we are committed here at the city to being environmentally friendly.
Got a question from Thea, who says, before the beautification of North River Road, there was a sign that said Lafayette at the ramp to the bridge from River Road into Lafayette. She says, I thought it would be put back up after the trellis across the road was finished, but it hasn't been. She says, we have friends who had a tough time finding us because we told them to take the Lafayette ramp, forgetting that the sign was gone. She says, even I have missed the ramp when it's been very dark and rainy and found myself going into West Lafayette. Is there any chance the sign can be put back up sometime, she wants to know. Is that an NDOT thing?
Well, I have to get my bearings here just a little bit. So they're coming in North River Road, I'm assuming, coming in into West Lafayette and want to turn left to go over like the Harrison Bridge to go up into across the Harrison Bridge to get back into Lafayette.
That sounds about right.
Well, I'd have to talk to Mayor Dennis just to be sure. I think he has control of the road in that portion, and if that's the case, and it's not an NDOT issue, I'm sure Mayor Dennis and myself can get that worked out to get that sign back up. You know, if the caller would maybe check back in with you or contact my office to make sure we're actually thinking about the right location, I'd certainly be happy to look into it.
Okay. Another question has come in from Rick, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase his question because I'm not entirely sure I understand it, but I'll give it to you as I understand it.
Okay.
And he wants to know if Lafayette police, I think, track the number of traffic citations that are given to city residents versus those people who live in other parts of the county. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but the tone of his question, and I'll say here that I don't have any evidence to suggest what I think he is suggesting. The tone of the question, though, is I think he suggests that Lafayette police might be more likely to give tickets to people who aren't city residents than to give to residents who they see the word Lafayette on licenses. First of all, just let me ask a numerical question. Do you track this at all?
No. I mean, we track the number of tickets that we write, obviously, and we track the violations are, but we don't have a city court in Lafayette. So once someone writes a traffic ticket, it goes into the state system, and if there is a court hearing, it goes into the county courts and the ones that are run by the state down at the courthouse, because we don't have a city court or a city judge or anything like that. So, you know, as a retired policeman, I can tell you that I've never seen that happen to most people, especially with the way that street names are on there and it says Lafayette. Sometimes even when you live out in the county, and sometimes people think what's in the county is actually in the city and vice versa. I with all due respect, I would guess that's not correct, and we don't even track that. And, you know, sometimes people think that the city gets the money off the traffic tickets and maybe somehow that comes into effect. But because we don't have our own court, that money all goes to the county and the state. We get back about a dollar something for each ticket that goes into a continuing education fund that has to be spent on law enforcement education. So,
in other words, probably less than you're paying the officer to write the ticket.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why they would feel that way or what would be. You said that it kind of came across. They think we write people that live in the city.
That city people. It sounds like this writer thinks that people in the live in the city get an easier ride than people who live in the county or in West Lafayette. But if they're all going to the same court, it's immaterial.
It's immaterial to us. Certainly from a financial standpoint, it is absolutely zero immaterial to us.
If you want to get your questions in today for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, call those in at 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. You talked about crime numbers, among other things, in your State of the City address the other night, and you noted that drug arrests had nearly doubled from 2016 to 2017. To what do you attribute that?
Well, I mean, we all know that we've said it for a long time that drug abuse, drug use, and also I think, you know, I thought about this, and it's important to talk about this too, excessive alcohol abuse, because excessive alcohol abuse is still a huge problem, right? And still the number one abused drug in the country. And so I think it's important to talk about that also. But we know with the opioid crisis, the heroin crisis, that, you know, that drives a lot of our crime. And so 2 years ago, when we looked at our initiatives, we talked about how we would be beefing up our street crimes unit, how we would be beefing up our drug task force, and how the city of Lafayette is actually in charge of the drug task force. In the past, the prosecutor was heading that up, and we're actually heading that up now. And so we have really put an emphasis on adding manpower, adding resources to really tackle that. But I want to be clear. I've said this all along. We know that tackling the drug crisis, the opioid crisis, is a multifaceted community response, from early childhood education to education about drugs and alcohol abuse through DARE, through our families, through Boys and Girls Clubs, all of those things. And then we need the medical community, the treatment community, you know, the addiction, the mental health.
Yeah, you said many, many times on this program and elsewhere, you can't arrest your way out of it.
We can't arrest our way out of it. But enforcement is a piece of it, and we're going to make sure that we're doing our part. And so we announced those initiatives to beef up all those departments, community outreach, engagement, all those things that we've made great progress on, and the number of meetings that we're having, neighborhoods that we're in, neighborhood centers that we're in, take-home car program, 17 more patrol cars in our neighborhood, and we should have another 9. We actually have policemen that have started moving back into the city limits so they can have that take-home car. And so, you know, it's we're doing all of those things, and it's starting to pay dividends, as you saw from the State of the City. Crime was down about 11% again this year. It was down about 11% again last year. That works out to about 24.4% over the last 2 years. You know, robberies were down. We had an uptick in aggravated assaults. But overall, crime is down, and I really believe that our initiatives are moving that needle in the right direction. And as I said in that talk, no mistake, we the battle's not over. Nobody's, you know, raising the flag that we've won this war. But we believe the things that we're doing and our emphasis and the community as a whole, United Way, working on helping with the mental health services, North Central Health Services, working on additional addiction services, all those things that are happening as a community, even the number of people that are on next door now turning in tips to us, it is all starting to pay off and move that needle in the direction that we hope it continues to go.
Is it fair to say that the police now are focusing more on drug crime than they had to in the past, whether it was when you were on the force or even, say, 5-6 years ago? Are they spending more attention on that specifically?
Well, I think the opioid crisis and the awareness about that is not lost on whether it's you and I or people in the community or the law enforcement officers. And because we know the data shows that it's driving so much of our other crime, that we certainly are more in tune to it. And I don't want that to make it sound like we weren't in tune to it at all. But we've added people. I mean, we've added 15 people in the last 5 years, and we've added people to the Drug Task Force. We've added people to street crimes that are really focusing on that. And so
I guess what I think is, do you think that more hours of the day are spent thinking about specifically drug crime because of the nationwide problem it's become?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I mean, I'd say that's fair. And the Street Crimes Unit is really focusing on that, too, along with the Drug Task Force. And I think our individual officers realize that. And the truth is, I mean, we all know just the sheer volume of people out there using, unfortunately, illegal narcotics is going to increase the number of contacts our patrol officers might have that aren't even specifically looking for that on that traffic stop or that call that they're on. And you go into that house and, well, there's 10 people there, right, that are using narcotics. And so they, as patrol officers running, I never say routine patrol activities because there's no such thing, but running those type of calls are running into that just more as a part of those patrol activities too.
As you're looking at forecasting how you're going to have to use your resources going forward, do you think you'll still have another year or more of drug arrests, drug crime going up before some sort of peak? Do you have any sense of when you might hit a peak as you look at it?
Well, that's why I don't go to Las Vegas, but I'd say there are a few more at least years, I think, of it going up because it's going to take some time. You know, we started the interdiction program with the West Lafayette Police Department that we're doing now on Interstate 65 and through thoroughfares in our community looking for drug couriers and making those – identifying and making those arrests. And so those types of things do take a few years. And then it's going to take also getting more treatment, getting more mental health available, helping people make that transition off that addiction and helping that then not spread it to additional people. And you've got to stop that whole flow. And you and I are both know from the discussions, even just getting people off heroin is a very challenging process. It takes years sometimes, and many times people fail the first few times that they try. And so I know it probably took us as a country about 10 years to really get us in the situation that we are. And I think you'll probably see it'll take at least 10 years to, you know, really get it out. I hope that goes a little bit quicker here because we are a microcosm and we're a little bit smaller and we're putting a significant amount of resources. And there's just this huge community spirit and outpouring of the medical field and charities and United Way that everybody has said, yes, this is a community problem and we're going to do our part. And because of that, I think we'll be quicker and more successful than a lot of places.
I was struck about how you talked about the drug numbers in your State of the City address, because I've always assumed, and tell me if I'm wrong, that if you're a chief executive of a city, there's maybe a calculus of how do we talk about these problems, because you want to look as good as possible to like outside investors, but at the same time, you want to give the citizens of the city a fair and honest and open assessment of what's going on around them. And so do you ever find you're having to sort of make that balance of how you look to the outside versus telling everybody exactly what's going on around them?
Well, I mean, what we try to do is be as open and honest with our citizens as possible on this because we need their help, right? They're the eyes and ears of the police department. They help us get information. They help us with education. They help us in a lot of ways. And so we really adopted the philosophy that we're going to engage our citizens. I mean, I think I would hope that you would agree, at least at some level, that you look at the number of press releases we put out, the number of classes we have, the number of public meetings that we're trying to have. We had 211 engagements last year through our crime prevention and community outreach that we want to be in the community. We want to be transparent. I talk openly about the need for addiction service. I talk openly about the need for mental health. I talk openly about what I'm not thrilled about with the needle exchange program. I mean, I think if a community is going to succeed long term, you have to have those frank conversations that makes you better and gets you there. And I think most business and industry see that effort, see that openness, see that we're going to get it done. They're going to stick with your community. You're going to come here because if you bury your head in the sand, you may look better for a while, but the truth is, long term, you're going to get crushed and bad things are going to happen. And I think business leaders appreciate strong leadership. And people said, here's an issue we got to deal with. We're going to find ways to solve it, and we're going to come out better at the other end of this. And I think our economics around here shows that that works. Our unemployment rate's incredibly small, and we have more jobs than we still have people right now. So I think people understand we're tackling it in the right way.
Another thing that's tangential to this discussion that we talked about on last month's show was that we talked just before there was a public meeting scheduled to allow the public their opportunity to address some of the addiction issues in the community. And I wanted to know, what your reaction has been to the things that you've heard from the public in that time. Because you had talked about, well, maybe if there's enough good stuff that comes out of this, we can do it on a regular basis. Or I wondered if in any of those discussions you ever get ideas that you can, for instance, present back to the police and say, hey, here's something that somebody had an idea with that we could maybe implement. Anything like that that's going on in the intervening months?
Yeah, I think that that does happen. It happens more with the people in the department that did those presentations, building those relationships, and maybe people coming directly to me. But what I do realize is a couple things. The people that came to that meeting are very, very engaged, and they really care on a lot of levels. The other thing that I learned is that a lot of people that came to the meeting are a lot of the people that are kind of already engaged, and that we still have to figure out a way to broaden that net of people that actually come to that. I'm glad everybody came that came, but I'd like to see that net broaden for maybe that folks aren't quite as engaged, getting a little bit more engaged. I see a lot of familiar faces that do a lot of things in the community. So as you probably have already seen, this month we're going to do one on gangs. And again, like you brought up, maybe some places we try to gloss over that a little bit, or you don't bring it up. Maybe people don't think about it, but we're going to have a public meeting to discuss that, what we see in the community, how people can help, put it in a proper perspective, because things are very good here. If you look at numbers and percentages and chances of being a victim of a violent crime, it is still absolutely minuscule.
And one of the things I tell people, because people have asked me, they say, hey, Stan, you live in Lafayette. I see some of these news stories about drug arrests and all that. Is it safe to live there? And I kind of look at them askance. And the thing I tell them, and I'm curious if people say the same thing to you, is I said, I never feel unsafe living in Lafayette. I feel like if you want to find trouble, you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing the things you're supposed to be doing, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to live a pretty safe life in Lafayette, regardless of whatever the drug numbers are.
Right. I mean, we've said it over and over. If you're not involved in illegal narcotics or excessive alcohol use, your chances of being a victim of some type of violent crime, if you just look at our population, we did the numbers one time, and it was like 0.05 was the number. And then we know that's not totally accurate because not everybody that's either a suspect or a victim of a crime actually live here. Some people come in, some people visit. So it is still a very, very small. And I know because we do these things in the media, and I understand why the media reports on those things. And when people go to court and there's different steps, and so you sometimes see the same crime several times. But if you really look at the numbers and you look at the data, it is still incredibly safe. And if you're not involved in any of that other activity, it's even safer. With that being said, we have work to do. We're going to keep working. But we're committed, and our resources, I think, speak for themselves, that we are putting the resources necessary to do all that we can.
Let me spend the last couple of minutes of the show on a kind of an arts and culture issue. The Tippecanoe Arts Federation is about to spend about $3 million renovating the Wells Community Cultural Center in downtown Lafayette, and that's going to help do things like open up some more performance space in downtown. Do you think that's going to satisfy the demand for performance space, or do you think there's still more? Because one of the things I hear from people is we've got small spaces and we've got really big spaces. And so there's people have said to us, as our John Clare, our music director, has gone around talking to folks in the community, they're like, what we could really use is like more medium-sized spaces. And it strikes me that those might be the hard ones to kind of incentivize to get going.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. I mean, we're very blessed with the arts and cultural scene that we have here in our community. And we have plans. There's a cultural plan that TAF worked on several years ago, and this is part of that, to continue to have those venues of different sizes for different opportunities for different groups. And I think that's, you know, a part of what we continue to do. And I think what TAF's doing, if you've looked at the design closely, there is some medium size, there's some different things in there, maybe a little different than we have. But I think it's going to be a really neat addition. And, you know, the city is proud to be involved in that. As you know, I talked earlier in my State of the City, and I know we're running out of time, that this really was a huge year for us with the groundbreaking of the new YMCA, the groundbreaking of the new North End Community Center, that there are just some wonderful things that are going to change people's lives for decades and open up new doors of hope and opportunity that I think are going to be transforming for this community. The TAF building, the old Well Center, again, for arts and culture, I think that's going to make a big difference. So the city, like with the other projects, you know, we've committed $250,000 of that $3 million to that project to help make that project a reality, because we think it's going to not fill all the gaps that you accurately described, but we think it's another step towards achieving what we really want for our arts and cultural and entertainment opportunities here in our community.
It seems like there are probably spaces that could be retrofitted into various size performance and art gallery type venues. Is there a way, you mentioned the city contributing $250,000 to this $3 million initiative. Do you have the ability at all to incentivize that if someone comes to you and says, hey, I have this idea for a 75-seat space or something?
Well, it would all depend. I mean, there are certain state laws that we have to use on how you can use pots of money for what. Not-for-profit, it's much easier than a for-profit venue. So there are ways, because it is part of economic development. We've talked about that. I know you believe that, too, that arts and culture are part of the vibrancy of a community that helps create jobs. And so, you know, last year we put about $2 million into the Long Center. A lot of it you can't see because it's heating, air conditioning, pipes, electric, things like that, to make sure it's we tuck pointed the outside of the building, new gutters, things like that. So we've done, you know, because we own that building. TAF obviously is a not-for-profit, so we can help with that, and we want to continue to do those things. But even on private, because we do other incentives for private, it's possible, yes. Each situation would have to be viewed independently, and we'd have to see where it fell into certain guidelines. But I consider arts and culture part of economic development.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's about the time we've got. As always, you know, more questions on my sheet than I have time for with you. So we'll look forward to doing this again next month.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Our guest today was Lafayette Mayor Tony Rzeworski. Want to point out one quick programming note to you, and that is that next week's program with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes is going to be pre-recorded. So if you want to get your questions in for Mayor McBarnes, I advise you to email those as soon as possible to our email address. That's ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter, but we will not be able to take your calls, unfortunately, during the show with Mayor McBarnes next week. So get those in advance. And remember that you can find all of these shows archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.